What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. Larry Rifkin along with John Kropsik. And John, I don't want to get ahead of myself in introducing this podcast.
Nor should you.
But this will be one of the more unusual interviews any of our regular America Trend listeners have ever heard. Would you acknowledge that?
He's a unique individual. Let me put it that way. He's a very unique individual.
And it was left to John to make an international connection so that we could bring you this next guest. And this was a legacy broadcast from our radio program a couple of years back. But don't turn the dial.
No,
we don't have a dial. We don't have a dial, do we?
Oh, that's true.
Well, don't do whatever you normally do when you tune out of someone else's podcast. No, don't touch that mouse because, you know, you don't know. That mouse could be infected with something. But the point is that this is so fascinating that John and I decided we have got to post this. And, let me transport you to Italy for this one. And, John, remember we had difficulty with the telephony related to this?
We did, yes. He was tough tracking down, for one thing.
Yes,
he was. We
did. Is there a doctor in the country that we can find? Well, we really want to introduce you. This man is really a dreamer, but he's not the only one. Wait a minute. Am I starting to imagine something? Well, he wants us to imagine the ability of a team of doctors to do, frankly, the unthinkable. And when I talk about it, John, I talk about it as a medical moonshot. That's what I call it.
Or something out of Young Frankenstein.
Very fanciful. Absolutely. Now, you may be wondering now, come on, get to it, Larry. Get to it, John. What are you telling me? All right, I'm not going to hold it back. Well, you take a functioning brain attached to a broken body and you reconnect it with a body that can function. And so you're kind of, you know, heads and tails, I guess, putting it together. And this all suggests that in some fashion, if there were to be a head transplant or a body transplant, whichever one you want to consider it to be, then somebody has had to figure out how to treat irreversible spinal cord injury, John.
As long as they don't get that AB normal brain.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably the topic for another podcast. But I'm talking about Dr. Sergio Canavero, and I don't want to make light of it because
he
does have a reputation in the medical community, and he does point to various peer-reviewed journals and articles saying this is possible, that's possible, on the way to doing something that no one has ever done before, and that is a head transplant.
Well, wasn't he actually, we got some information after that he was actually trying to put a team together, I guess. So, I mean, this is it's pretty serious business.
Oh, absolutely. And he had a donor, as I recall, from Russia, somebody who really wanted to be the first. And he also had doctors in China. And he thinks that there have been enough lab experiments with animals, mice in particular, suggesting that the ability to reattach a head and a spinal cord would be possible. Now, there are many in the medical community who think that this is, well, let's put it this way, fantastic, but not in the way that you might think fantastic. They think it is giving false hope to individuals. You're going to decide on your own whether you think this is possible. The only reason, John, that I wanted to bring it back, because we did this a couple of years back, is because I read recently where he's continuing to do work on this.
Right.
Still believes he can put those 100 surgeons together, whatever it may be, for a 24-hour surgery. I mean, remarkable stuff. If it ever comes about. Now, to update my thinking on this, I have come into contact with the doctor at NYU who has done the most successful facial transplant in history. And you might have seen the report on this on 2020 or on 60 Minutes, and it was remarkable, Dr. Eduardo Rodriguez. And what he did to take someone who had been shot or self-inflicted wound to the face, and then a mother whose son died, and she donated his organs and his face. And it was a remarkable undertaking. And I asked Dr. Rodriguez whether he gets asked about this, the head transplant, having done the facial transplant. And he said, oh, I get asked about it all the time. And I know that he's not certain that they really have figured that out. But what he did, just as it relates to the facial transplant itself, is absolutely remarkable.
It's incredible. I mean, something you can, you wouldn't even dream of, a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. And he wanted to make certain that this face was not just, functional to some extent, that somebody could really go out into the public and feel that people would look at them and say, he's got total functionality and he looks good. And they had to do so much work around the scalp line. I mean, it was remarkable. It really was. So we know that science has so many abilities today that are almost unimaginable. Well, out of the radio archives, a true believe it or don't with Dr. Sergio Canavero, only on America Trends. Dr. Canavero, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm there. I'm here. I'm sorry for what's gone on, but, as we said, technology sometimes, goes awry.
Well, we would hope.
We only hope that the first head transplant won't work the other way. Otherwise, we'll be just screwed bad,
Yeah, I would say so. Well, tell us again. I've been trying to explain this all to my audience, but why don't you explain what you're attempting to do here and why this is so important and such a dramatic development in science?
Absolutely. Let me say, let me say this, that this is not about me. Right now we have, as you know, there is a protocol just being developed for China, and we just sealed a protocol agreement with my dear friend, Professor Xiaoping Lan from Harbin University in China to do this. And I can just do some breaking news for you, and right now, as we speak, we are working towards setting up another protocol with Russia, with the Russian team, because unfortunately, Valery Spiridonov, as you all know,
I mentioned him. Yes,
the volunteer for the surgery. Okay, he will not receive a new body in China for reasons that might be clear to anybody. He's white, Caucasian, and he cannot receive a body from a Chinese. So this has to happen in Russia or Europe. That's why you also remember that in Annapolis in June I made a plea for American surgeons to join us in this endeavor. Not that I needed America, but I just needed other surgeons just to hop in and just on the wagon, because actually a body, it could be an American body just going to Valeri, a European body going to Valeri, or a Russian body going to Valeri, but not a Chinese body. That's not going to happen.
One of the questions I had, which is, what is the genetic likenesses that you need to have for, a body and a head to come together in a successful fashion?
Look, actually, right now we are just addressing an aesthetic aspect of the surgery, which is equally important. I just do remember a Brazilian television asking me, would you just contemplate a black receiving the body from a white or vice versa? And I said, why would I want to do that? I mean, psychologically, it's going to be a real toil just to go through. So we have to be sure that the body that this guy will receive is actually as similar as possible to what he
yes.
had before. So, I mean, but, you know, you received a sort of question, so I believe that I need just to make everybody apprised of this possibility. However, let's not make mistakes. The kind of immunological matching we're looking at is the same that plays out in any transplant surgeries. It means that for heart, for lungs, for what have you, for faces, and so on. So there is no difference here. What is to be understood is that it is the body that might reject the head, because the immune system is, of course, located in the body.
Okay.
That said, please.
This is the last frontier in many ways of, this great movement toward transplantation regeneration. Explain to us what to this point has kept anyone from having a vision as large as yours, and how you think you've overcome those obstacles.
Well, actually, this question of yours applies to anybody who just came before me and will come after me with a vision. Why didn't others have that vision? that's the history of science. At a certain point, I was a kid, and I read about Robert White's experiments. And, when you are a kid, it is not that you are gullible in this case, but you are, impressionable. And I was really, blown away with this sort of concept, transplanting head on a body. And I said to myself, I want to be part of that. And so it is not me, Robert White, Demikov, all the others who came before. The problem is that you have to set the sights straight onto the target. You have to decide that is to be your target in life. So I made that a head transplant the goal of my life. And so why others did not? Actually, it's not true, because Xiaoping Lin, the Chinese surgeon, actually a few years ago just came out with the same idea. I want to do a head transplant, and so that we knew each other after reading the respective our papers. So it is not that there is only Sergio. There are a lot of people out there, including American surgeons, who wrote me about their ideas on how to do a head transplant. So it means there are several people around the world, and I mean really around the world, who just set their sights on doing a head transplant. Only I made it the real goal. I made all that I did was just geared towards a transplant. That's a history of science, nothing more and nothing less. So
okay. Now, what was it, though, in terms of medicine, science, technology, that has now moved us to a point where we understand better the possibilities here, that we don't have to get all that bundle of spaghetti that you showed on your TED Talk together in terms of reattaching a head to a body? What was it that, Yes.
Yeah, I understand that question. First of all, let me give you another breaking news. In two months from now, we'll make an announcement. And so I make you privy to this well before anybody else.
Thank you.
So I'm celebrating my birthday today, so I'll give my present for you all.
Happy birthday.
I'm not giving the age away, not maybe, you never do that. But it is my pleasure to announce that Professor Michael Sarr, a surgeon from the Mayo Clinic in the United States and chief editor of a major academic journal, has just sponsored a symposium that will appear in two months. And at the time, we're calling all the media and show them the data from the first Chinese experiments. I cannot tell you more, of course, but I can tell you that their results will be really, something like that.
Okay, so today you announced two things.
I cannot add anything more.
No, I appreciate it, but you broke...
But this is really a breaking news for you. Why? Actually, it is not only that the technology has moved on, and of course everybody just heard about this this substance that can have the power to refuse the severed spaghetti. As you know, I'm Italian, I love spaghetti, so spaghetti really just conveys just the big punch and really illustrate the point I'm aiming at, that it's these fibers that had just to be rejoined, but actually it's also the inner part of the cord, which I just talked over in Annapolis in June, and so on. Well, the PEG thing has been around for 30 years.
But explain that. Explain that.
That is amazing. And that really ties in with the question you asked before. If you have a goal in life, in this case a head transplant, you're looking at all possible aspects that all available technologies that might really help you carry that out, achieve that goal. So when I read about PEG in 1986, and I say again, 1986, I said to myself, hey, man, this is cool. Might this work for what I have in mind? Actually, only two groups, both in America, worked on this tech stuff. Nobody anywhere in the world really caught up to what was going on. Don't ask me why, because I'm going to spite somebody. So, but the problem is that nobody really understood the power of that tag paper, those first tag papers. I did, and I incorporated this tag thing into the Gemini protocol, which is actually, it's only one thing. There is also the spinal cord stimulation thing, which is equally, if not more, important. In America, you still don't know that 2 weeks ago, one of the greatest experts in spinal cord stimulation for spinal cord injury rehabilitation is now part of our team. That is Professor Minassian from the University of Austria, and it has just been announced. Germany and Austria just went all bonkers about that. Another expert in Canavero's team actually is very kind, just providing further technology, because spinal cord stimulation is as important as the PEG thing. So you might ask me, what is the technology that's been accrued over the past 20 or 30 years? I would say the spinal cord stimulation for this sort of specific thing we are just talking about has been around from 1992, 6 years after the PEG thing. So I started incorporating all these things into the Gemini protocol, and I can only say that incredibly results have accrued along the way. You are familiar in the United States with that football player who was made paraplegic and could stand up and rewalk again in 2011 at the hands of Dr. Harkima. And that is the picture that is spinal cord stimulation, a reactivating part of the spinal cord, PEG acting on the spaghetti, and of course I'm making it simple. It's not, but in February you will have all the details and much more. But in the tech talk, and I also just delivered another Creative Mornings talk where I give even more details. But you can really start in imagining that if you don't damage the cord, you can reattach it. What was really horrible, and I would say heinous, in Annapolis, is that the surgeons there did not know the first thing about what I was discussing. Nothing about the PEG, nothing except one colleague about the spinal cord stimulation, nothing about combining the power of the two. So how would you define this? I don't know. I don't want to spite or criticize anybody. I let others criticize me. I say it.
And believe me, doctor, you don't have to defend yourself here, because most people have never even heard about this. They didn't read the Guardian piece. They haven't watched the TED Talk. But I came upon it, and I wanted those who listen to me to hear about this, because I thought it was one of the most miraculous things I have ever heard. And when I watched
you're very kind.
But when I watched you on the TED Talk, you were talking talking about, and this would be really interesting because there are so many people in our audience who know people who have muscular dystrophy, who have various, muscular problems. And you said that we have discovered now a second motor highway. I mean, explain that to us.
Oh, that's very, oh, well, that's pretty hard to do, on a radio interview. But, that motor highway 2 is the key. So let me explain here. The trick to make this work is not the PEG or the spinal cord stimulation. These two technologies simply act as accelerators for the fusion process after you cleanly cut, sever the spinal cord. What will make this work is this motor highway 2 found located in the gray matter that is in the core, in the cellular core of the gray matter, that for the longest time has been considered just, cells sitting idling there, and you had to say this at every anatomy examinations you had to take at any universities around the world. That was the key part of all of this. After I realized that this motor highway 2, the cellular highway, motor and sensory, which is found in the spinal cord, had already been discovered in the first half of the 20th century, and then, for reasons unknown to me, don't ask me, completely forgotten. I don't know how to explain that, or probably I know, but I don't want to say. Then after I just focused on that motor highway 2, I could combine the power of PEG and spinal cord stimulation and come out with a Gemini spinal cord fusion. But you mentioned spinal muscular conditions. That is what this whole shebang is for. I mean, heaven was conceived initially as the cure for these disorders, because let's be very honest and upfront, medicine has failed. You heard about gene therapy, stem cells here and there, but the fact is, if you go to any hospital around the world and you have a muscular dystrophy and you ask for a cure means that now I'm sick and let's say in 1 month from now, 6 months from now, I'm totally cured. Well, you're just, barking up the wrong tree, because there is no hospital, no such hospital. Because what they tell you on the media, gene therapy, stem cells, I'm sure that one day they will just deliver the goods, but not now. And what about all those who are in that condition right now? They are outside the bailiwick of these therapies whenever they might come. So what I'm telling you is that for these people, there is only one cure, and the cure is heaven, a head body swap. There is no other way. Just because we just wrote that, an article that's just getting out right now. Since we failed, probably heard these billionaires who just give lavish billions onto researchers for incredible discoveries. But where are these incredible discoveries? I mean, we specifically asked billionaires from around the world to support our initiative. But no single billionaire came out, in the light of day, to support our endeavor. We are thankful, I thank the Chinese for understanding what this is all about, and the Chinese government. So I'm saying, I know how it works in the United States, but you have plenty of wealthy men, plenty of billionaires there. What are they sitting there for? I mean, the association of this patient, they never contacted me. Never. Yeah. I mean, probably because I'm, as they say, I'm controversial. I understand that. I'm controversial. When you just come out with ideas like that, you have to be controversial. But then listen to me. Who came to Annapolis? Who came to Annapolis? The media. I'm very happy that the media came to Annapolis, but the sponsors, all the critics, not a single critic came to Annapolis. I mean, Annapolis, Maryland, United States, it's not far from where you are.
No, like not that. At all. So now, you're putting together a team to do this. Having read about what is going to be involved, the time involved, the professionalism, obviously, that this takes, you're as much of a pioneer as any pioneer we've ever read about, somebody going into space for the first time. Do you have the team ready, or are you now assembling it? You named a couple of individuals.
Absolutely. I can tell you that first of all, for the Chinese initiative, The team leader is Xiaoping Lin. In that case, I will be assistant, officially, of course. The Chinese team. The Chinese team, I cannot tell you more.
No, that's okay. What about the Russian? I mean, if you did it in Russia.
Yes, yeah, I can tell you. But about the Chinese initiative, well, in 2 months you will know more, but I can tell you that the surgical team is already being assembled as we speak under the leadership of Xiaoping Lin. So the Chinese initiative is just moving on its own accord, and that was pretty cool.
Okay, are you looking at 2017? Is that still...
Absolutely, December. But I can tell you that right now we are just in talks with the Russians in order to make it happen there, and I will be assisting there. I told them in order to make it, you need Neil Armstrong couldn't be Sergio Canavero, could be an American. If it happens in Russia, the team leader has to be a Russian. If it happens in China, as it will, it has to be a Chinese surgeon, in this case, Xiaoping Lin. So in this case, in these initiatives, I'm just assisting, so to speak.
Okay. If this is successful, help us, yes. I mean, again, we're lay people, help us understand what this then unlocks in terms of human potential, how you look upon this as opening doors to helping so many people today who, you know, have a healthy brain, but they have a body that has betrayed them, and vice versa, someone who's brain dead, but there's a body there. I mean, you know, what does this suggest going forward?
Oh, look, first of all, I invite you all to watch my Creative Mornings talk, you know, Google Talks, Creative Mornings, Sergio Canavero, where you will get the whole picture.
Okay.
But that said, first of all, who betrayed us? The body, who betrayed these people? The bodies, yes, medicine too. But this is going to be revolutionary. It has implications that go well beyond medicine. The day it happens, it will open up new vistas and new frontiers. That's why in one of this symposia I was referring to before, we have the contribution of a philosopher, because this is going to rewrite centuries of philosophy about who we are, the sense of self, what happens after death. I mean, this is going to be so huge and so revolutionary that I can't even begin to just lay out all the implications, consequences of what would happen. But I can tell you this, that is going to be revolutionary. There is no question about that.
And your confidence level, as we speak here on December 29th, 2015, and we're looking toward 2 years from now, 2017 in December, tell us your confidence level and level of preparedness. In other words, do you think you're 70% of the way there, 80?
I can tell you this. I'm lucky enough, having met my dear friend Xiaoping Lin, because he proved, and actually all those behind him, I went to China in August. That's where we sealed the disagreement, as this protocol said. And the Chinese are working so fast that it could even happen before Christmas 2017. But for now, let's stick to that date. I mean, I'm totally confident that, you know, barring that, you know, floods or acts of God or whatever you might come up with, we are just set on just making it becoming a reality by Christmas 2017. So
okay.
I'm pretty confident.
Okay, and after it's done, what is it that the new body and head attached should be able to do in terms of full functioning? I mean, what do you imagine, what do you hope for, expect?
Look, in Annapolis, they made it clear that as it happens in for all technologies, initially it won't be perfect. It means that I told the media, I asked Valeri, I'm sure you will be able to walk again, but I'm not sure if you will be able to run. It means that even if you can walk, but slowly, but walk, would it be fine with you? And he said, absolutely, I can't do anything right now. I'm just, bedridden or wheelchair ridden. I'm laid out all day. I can't do things like sex, for instance. So I'm, of course, the first head transplant would be something like Kitty Hawk, the first plane, the Wright brothers. Of course, it was a plane. It flew. It flew for 30 seconds, 50 seconds, and then it was all the way up to our modern-day plane. So the first transplant will not be somebody like, you know, hey, I'm totally normal again. I'm looking at 70-80% normality, which is really a huge success. From then on, other teams will start working on it. We will have just advances, just as happens for any surgical or technological act. So there is nothing new here. So I would believe that 10 years after the first head transplant, the technique will have been perfected, will be much better, and then from now on, we can move on to stage two. That, as you know, I just mentioned that on TEDx and Quarterly Mornings, it is life extension. Life extension is the next goal of the whole heaven.
So does that mean that ultimately, I mean, if your body, you know, kind of begins to give out at age 85 or 90, but you're still, you know, Warren Buffett-like in terms of your thought process, that you can then, you know, give me a new body and let me go on for another 40 years so I can, you know, continue to think?
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. That is the revolutionary part of it. I have to say that, frankly, from a medical standpoint, yes, it is revolutionary, yes. But the real revolution that is just brewing ahead lies in the fact that one day you will be able to apply this technology to life extension. Why? We have to be clear with your audience. And the fact is that we know for a fact that when you just wash all tissues in the blood of young organisms, you just are looking at a rejuvenation effect. That is, you are just winding the clock of life back in time. So imagine receiving the body of a 20-year-old, then your tissues, your brain, as you just probably mentioned in your with your work, is that you will just see a rejuvenation effect in your brain, in your tissues of the head, because the rest of the body is young, of course. So imagine another 40 years alive. That is the first real step, hard-won step for medicine towards life extension. And imagine what that implies for all mankind. Who will get the body? Who will just be given the option of extending their life? The rich, the wealthy, or the haves, or the have-nots? Mm. And what about the have-nots? You know, that is going to be a shock for society. That is another revolutionary.
Well, that's a whole other set of issues. But here's another issue, and then we'll close, because I think we've given people a lot to think about today that they weren't imagining they were going to awaken to. But the question that I have is, I mean, the new person, just like people say, you know, people take on traits of someone whose heart has been transplanted, which, again, people thought that was impossible to imagine. Who is this new person?
Oh, that is the question of the questions. First of all, let me tell you very frankly, we are just wading into uncharted territory. But first of all, because here philosophy and neuroscience just clash. Religion and philosophy clash. So who will be the new person? Certainly he will just have the memories of his old body, of course, because those memories are filtered through the brain. But not only. We now know that the trillions of bugs you have in your guts actually rule over you, because they just set the pace of the brain via nervous path that goes straight from the bowels to the brain. It means that you are under control. You would get under control of this flora, as it's called, intestinal flora of the new body. So there will be a clash between the flora that has an influence on the brain and the brain that filters your memories. Mm. So what I said is clear. It will be 80% what you are and 20% or more of influenced by the body. So this is the very good question. We don't have a definitive answer for, But as I said, it is human history that you wade into uncharted territory in order to make discoveries.
All right.
That's
well,
why we need someone who is really brave, and Valery Spiridonov is really brave, a really ballsy guy, and I really hope he will be the first to receive
it. Well, you're a pretty bold thinker yourself. Dr. Sergio Canavero, happy birthday, and thank you for breaking news on my program and for sharing this remarkable scientific event that is about to take place. It is just down the road, and we wish you all the best, and now my audience will watch this with great interest, and I cannot thank you enough for coming by today on WATR.
Thanks to you all, and thank you for the very smart questions you asked. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ciao.
All right, and best of luck to you. We're all with you. And I don't know. I mean, this is just amazing, really, when you think about it. Wow. I mean, did you hear what you heard today on WATR? I mean, it's pretty amazing. And he did announce some things today, that there's a doctor from the Mayo Clinic who is now getting involved, that the Russians are looking for their own participation in this project. And, so he broke some news for us, too. I did not expect that. I mean, we just went out looking for him. I read this piece in The Week, which was taken from The Guardian. If you want to look for more of this, it is online at TED Talk. And I thank you for your time and indulgence on this topic. Look, we don't get into things that are changing as this often. We don't. And, we take very seriously the responsibility to be a broadcaster and to bring you things that are beyond our current thinking and expand our way of looking at the world and at ourselves. And I would be curious as to what questions remain in your brain as you listen to Dr. Canavero. And do you think he will be successful? And are you now interested in this in a way that you were not before? Or are you actually turned off by all of this? Is it almost too much for you to process? If you would like to comment today, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from some of the scientists out there. I know Ken is one.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, what's up,
John? I got some exciting news for you.
Well, let's hear it.
We're part of the MHNR network.
And where can we find that?
That's MHNRnetwork.com.
I'm going there right now.
All right.